tonight on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. We have Chicago Tribune cartoonist Scott Stantis joining the show with comedian Michael Palasak. And it's Theater Thursday. Coming on, we have Babes with Blades Theater Company, who are supporting the Fighting Words Festival, as well as our friends Chris and Lauren, who are supporting an annual birthday fundraiser for Howard Brown Health. And do you love movies? Well, we're going to be talking about the Chicago Critics Film Festival at 105. But now, the favorite show of listener Wayne from Cape Canaveral, Florida, it's time for Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
It's a crisp, cool, lovely spring evening in downtown Chicago, and we are live in the Allstate Showcase studio. You're listening Pretty Late on the Patty V Show. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and we do have a lot of ground to cover tonight, so I want to get right to my guests that I have in the studio. Two of my favorite people on the planet.
Aww.
It's Scott Stantis, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, also a member of the editorial board.
At the moment.
Okay, interesting. Interesting sort of...
A lot of moving parts.
All right, then. I'll keep my ears and eyes open for that next text then.
Not you and me both.
All right then. That's Scott Stantis and also comedian Michael Palasak, whose career I've watched over the last decade just grow and blossom into one of the top comics in the country. You've seen him on The Tonight Show, The Late Late Show, The Late Show, The Comedy Central, The TBS Show. I can't tell all the things.
Yeah, it's okay.
Conan
O'Brien.
You got
all the good ones. Yeah,
that's right. All those
Patty
shows.
Pretty late.
That one too. Uh-huh. He's right off the stage at Zany's. He's going to be there tomorrow night through Sunday. Uh-huh. You got shows at 8 o'clock tomorrow, uh-huh. 7, 9, and 11, 15 on Saturday, and another show at 8 o'clock on Sunday.
And Sunday, moms get in free and their guests get half off.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So that's exactly, Scott.
Mother's Day.
They also have they're going to have a summer pass. You can buy a summer pass at Zany's.
Yeah.
When you buy a ticket, you can use that towards the price of a summer pass go to all the shows.
It's not expensive either. It's
What does a summer pass get you?
Get in any time in the summer.
All the summer shows.
Buy special events or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Exactly. So
it's like Six Flags season pass, but for
how'd it go tonight, Michael?
It was good. I was telling Patty it was a smaller audience, but they were happy. They had fun.
Plus two other comics who've been on a lot of the late shows, including both of them had been on Letterman, Dwayne Kennedy and Pat McGann stopped by to do guest sets.
So star studded.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So well, very fun.
That's a good day.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was thinking about this today. I've been doing more theater shows, right? And I enjoy that. I love Zany's. It's one of my favorite clubs. It is my home club.
Yeah.
And but I was thinking about this in relation to something that I heard about the Tribune deciding to do today. I was starting to get a bit of a short fuse with people who just would start talking during a show as though it was a conversation just with them. And what I do when I'm on stage and that happens in a comedy club is I will come off the stage to the table that's being the most disruptive and basically ask them why they think their input, their disruptiveness is worth ruining everyone else's night. Why they think they have more value than everybody else to be jerks.
What do they say?
Yeah, what are some of the answers for that?
I've had one guy said, go back on stage, little girl. Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
And I'll tell you off the air how I took care of that. I don't know if I can use the words. I mean, here's what I said. I said, look, if you don't enjoy the show, I get it. If I'm not your type of comic, you know, that's why we had three comics. I hope you liked one of the other comics. Uh-huh. And I said, hey, you know what? The audience got really mad because they were like, no, you know, don't be nice to him. They were yelling. And I said, no, let me buy him a drink. And they started booing. And I go, hey, bartender, let me have a vinegar and water for the D-bag over here. So that's, I mean,
we're all extras in your joke, Patty.
Scott's just, it's a slow burn because you realize the word I actually use. I went did all of that. Yeah.
And then I did the chemistry.
I learned the chemistry just now.
So that's, to that, it's in person is one thing, but when you are behind a keyboard, like I mentioned last week, there was somebody who was being extremely verbally abusive on my text screen, and I had another listener who was mad because they're like, oh, what are you, the thought police? I couldn't possibly do that because I can't control what you think.
Yeah.
But if you're going to be nasty, disgusting, and not contribute, one, we can block you on our text screen. That's easy peasy, lemon squeezy. That's, but also could be a additive in such product. Anyway,
Wide range of words today.
In chemistry.
Easy peasy.
Easy peasy. So we can block you. I have not done that. I have not employed that technique. But I was fascinated that the Chicago Tribune has decided that when they post articles online, they will be closing their comments section. And here's why I'm happy for that. Because if people want to have a conversation about a piece that Scott Santas does, they don't have to comment right on his on the paper's website. The newspaper, their job, their obligation to you is to report the news, to share conversations, not to hold the conversation. If people want to talk about your piece, Scott, not that piece, I apologize,
I understand.
Your cartoons, they can take the link, post it on their Facebook page, and start a conversation.
Right.
Go have your own conversation. Here, you know what? You can call me. We'll have a conversation.
Yeah.
But hiding behind a screen and being a jerk, I have no problem with limiting that.
The idea was obviously to create... We, the newspaper business, talk a lot, especially recently, of creating community. This seemed to be contrary to that idea that, yeah. But it's apparently a community of a very stern parent who, anytime the children speak, says, shut up! and the reason I mentioned, jokingly said, I don't know what's happening, you know, with me at the... This came as a complete surprise to me.
They're closing the comments, yeah, but they're not the first.
No.
Didn't Cranes just do
can
that?
Can you still comment with a pic, like a draw? Can I comment with a drawing? Like a counter drawing?
I would post it. I would replace my cartoon with your drawing.
Cool.
I would.
Because they can't police the language and the way people go after each other.
In the way that, in fact, I was on Mincing Rascals with Eric Zorn, and he had a very active community. He was one of the first ones to really have a presence online, many, many years ago. But he would monitor the comments and be like, really, really police them and just say, this guy's a jerk, he's gone, you know, and just let's stay on subject. Here's what we're talking about. And if you have someone who can put that kind of time into that, it's great. It can really be interesting. If you don't, it becomes, you know, free range stupid. And
people go after each other. I
know it's weird.
They track each other down on Facebook. They go to their pages. They send them messages. Oh, people get belligerent and personal. So
and they say newspaper is dead.
Yeah, exactly. Well, do you think that having the comment section open was beneficial to the Chicago Tribune?
I think we needed it, as Eric mentioned earlier. I think you needed it to be managed and monitored, and we just don't have the resources or time to do it.
Right.
So yeah.
So somebody ruined it for everybody. Just want to, which I'm sure they're happy with. You know, or they're like, oh, they're just wimps. Oh, what a bunch of snowflakes.
Yeah.
That's how they sound in my head, by the way.
But like, I've never read a comment section and be like, well, these are the people that know things. You know what I mean? Like, no one's giving it the credit of the Chicago Tribune.
No, and you're right.
These are the real thinkers in the world.
Okay, this is the one that's coming up. He's going to take his job.
Let's hire this guy. Oh,
wow.
God, is that funny?
This is the deepest thinker in the tri-state area.
No one's ever gotten a job at the Tribune because of like a comment.
That's an excellent point. I mean, although I was thinking about this today. You know who got a job at WGN Radio for being a regular caller is Nick D. Like because he was participating and passionate about movies, that Roy Leonard would invite him to the movies, and then at some point just turned over the movie after it was it's one movie in particular. It was what's the one with the. Oh boy, Nick's gonna be really mad at me
Something About Mary.
Something About Mary. Thank you, because I was like, all I can think is bodily fluid in her hair. That's all I can think about. And Roy Leonard was like, nope, I'm out. But I mean, like, that's an example of somebody who is passionate about the topic and the conversation. Mm-hmm. People who want to be negative and belligerent, and nasty and contentious, it's not pleasant. It's not good radio. It's not But here, there was somebody who participated and did get a job at WGN Radio.
You're
so it's kind of a cool story. Right. It is a very cool story.
And the comments are still open at Go Comics, where you're on my comic strip and on my editorial cartoons. And you're right. The conversations get funky. They just like, they kind of at each other.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I'll write about, you know, Vice President Pence, and the conversation will be about, you know, license plates. And really passionate for paragraphs at a time.
Well, and then, like you said, though, because it's on your page, right? Then you can monitor that, should you choose to.
I don't.
Right. I don't either. But people who I'm not friends with on Facebook also can't post on my wall. Like, they can't just put whatever they want on my wall. They can, I think, if they're not my friend. And I have two pages. I have my personal page. And I mean, like, that should be where I can do whatever I want. But people seem to think that I owe them something. But on the Patty V Show page, it's Patti V Show. Please like my page. That one, I don't really police it unless, like, again, someone uses really vulgar language. They can have a conversation. I think somebody blocked where they can't send me messages. messages anymore. Like someone, I think along the way, I don't know if it's a previous producer or something, and I don't know how to undo that. So my apologies to anyone who's tried to send me a message.
Actually, isn't there a block list that you can go to on your Facebook account?
Yeah,
and
you
can unblock really people.
Ah, okay.
And unblock them too.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I've done that on my WGN email. There was a woman, like when I first got this job, was like just messaging me constantly saying to my WGN email, "How dare you? You're not a broadcaster. Like, how dare I take this job?" As though they would offer me the job, and I'd be like, "Oh no, you know, I'm just not. I know there are other people who are so much more qualified."
Yeah, because no one in America does a job that they weren't qualified to do. Like, nobody ever.
Nobody
has
ever
been elected to something.
No
that
headlines
they didn't work
about any individuals like that. More for this on 720 WGN. It is Thursday night. I was trying to figure it out, Michael. I was doing the math in my head. Let's see. Yesterday was Wednesday. The day before that was Tuesday. Tomorrow is Friday. So today must be Thursday. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. You're listening pretty late on the Patty V Show. And joining me in studio is the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, Scott Santis. And we are giggling because poor comedian Michael Palasek has just launched into a sneezing fit. Are you okay? Put your hands up.
I had a fortune caught in my throat.
You had a fortune caught in your throat? Yeah. I handed out fortune cookies to everybody on the show. I apologize to my guests who are in the green room. I don't think I have enough for them. So I thought, did you open your fortune cookie already?
It made me mad.
It made you mad?
Yeah, this is one of those things that just,
is it better if you say in bed? Have you ever done fortune cookies where you end it with in bed? Would it be better if it's in bed? No?
No.
Okay, is it worse in bed?
Well, no, let's see. Time is precious, but truth is more precious than time.
In bed.
Which is not true. Because the last thing you want in bed is the truth.
Wait, true? I mean, really? Do you really?
Super.
Yeah, one more time. You definitely want more time. You're right about that.
But I don't want advice from a baked good. I just don't.
Okay, so what was it? Time is more precious than...
Time is precious, but truth is more precious than time.
Yeah, I don't agree with that either.
I was saying, mine's fine. It's just a stupid thing. But I couldn't find a place to live a couple months ago, and I was at a Panda Express and I had a fortune cookie and I was like, whatever this fortune cookie says, like I thought this might help me out. I opened it up, there was no paper inside. Oh, only time I've ever had in my life.
You have no fortune.
No fortune. I was like, I need you, and he's like, whoa, too
no,
close.
I'm out.
Yeah.
That's yeah. I love it. Oh man, yeah, what does that tell you?
I have no idea.
How did your apartment hunting turn out?
I found a place, it was good.
All right. It worked out eventually.
What is yours saying?
Mine says, your eyes are the window of your soul.
See, that's not a fortune.
Don't worry. Be happy. I get a song lyric. Don't worry, be happy.
That's like two thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although my here's my Chinese. Wenzi. Did you get your Chinese lesson?
Is that Wednesday?
No, it's review.
Review. Man.
Well, so let's see if you can guess what, Patty. Bujian.
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 Get out of the way.
Lost.
Oh, I was close.
I'm really choking on this thing. Mine is Shang.
Shang?
Mm-hmm. It's up.
Up. Well, did you tell us your fortune?
Oh, my fortune here says, you are a bundle of energy, always on the go.
Okay.
That's just an observation.
Here, let's trade.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Well, you know what I
You're
say
a bundle
that,
of energy.
Michael, truth is precious, but truth is more precious than time. Or time is precious. I don't know.
That's more of an opinion. I don't like when it's an opinion.
They got to be running out of these.
No, what does make something upset? You're going to make a huge fortune in the next month.
That'd be great.
Cool.
You will meet someone with brown eyes.
Okay.
Exactly. See, because your chances are pretty good that you will.
That's true.
Michael, will you tell us your fortune?
My fortune?
Yes, please.
I haven't opened it yet. Let me open it.
Oh, okay. Let me go around the horn then. Let's see who has theirs. Robert. Robert. Why did he call you Robert, Rob?
That's all right.
That was weird.
Well, that is my full name.
It felt weird though.
That's okay.
What's your middle name?
Lewis.
Whoa, Robert
Lewis Martyr Jr.
Wow, that sounds very fancy.
Mm-hmm. Wow. He sounds like a writer from the 20s.
Or a royalty.
What? Robert Louis Stevenson, right?
Oh, yeah, it does sound like that.
Here I am anchoring the news.
There you go. What's your fortune?
You will always have good luck in your personal affairs.
Oh.
That's a fortune.
That's a fortune.
That's a fortune.
And
wow.
My learned Chinese word is, assuming I'm pronouncing it correctly,
okay.
Jing.
Ooh.
Jing, that means to be fine.
Oh, I am Jing.
So, yeah. Jing to all of you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that.
You bet.
Esmeralda, have you opened yours? As is like, hold on a second.
I have some stuff I'm looking up. Sorry.
Oh, no. Get to work, will you? Michael's got his.
I've got mine now.
What's your fortune, Michael?
Mine fits very well in the in-bed scenario.
Oh.
All right.
So glad that you're telling us that ahead of time.
All right. Find release in your cares and wow. Have a good time.
Wow.
In bed. But sadly, my Chinese word is gong qi, mm-hmm. which is homework. Oh, so, thanks.
Well,
keep that in mind.
You can also do your homework in bed.
I guess you can.
So there you go. That all worked out.
It all comes together.
Now, how many of you are now hungry for Chinese food, by the way? I have these because the restaurant that I ordered from the other day, from Lin's Mandarin, they not only did they send me a massive amount of fortune, because we also had a bunch at home, and there were only three of us eating dinner, and we had to have had about 25 fortune cookies.
That's great.
But the other thing was the massive amounts of soy sauce, sweet sauce, and mustard sauce that they sent along with it. So now I'm trying to find some recipes where I can just use all the packets of soy sauce.
Yeah.
Because I just have too much. Do you need soy sauce?
Well, no. When Janine leaves town, all things get used eventually. Depending if she's gone for more than say 3 days, yeah.
All the packets are gone.
All the packets, all the olives, all the.
I do feel that way when I'm by myself in my apartment, where it's like I'm going to use everything in my fridge. Like it turns into like that
MacGyver,
book, the hatchet as a kid or whatever. Like I'm going to use all my resources.
I feel like a Boy Scout in the kitchen.
Food MacGyver. That's a great show.
I think Food MacGyver would be a good. Yeah. You know who had that idea a few years ago before I go to the break? Roseanne actually was trying to sell a reality show that would basically be making whatever's in your fridge. She would have, it was like, I don't know if it was like a cooking competition, but you had to only make what was already in your fridge.
Yeah.
Apparently the checks are bigger on ABC. More for this on 720 WGN. Chicago has one of the most vibrant theater scenes in the world. I'm not making that up, Scott. I think that I can say that not just the
Without
big
fear
theaters.
Of contradiction.
I don't think so. I mean, yeah, your traditional Broadway type shows, and then we have the most incredible storefront theaters, some neighborhood theaters. It's incredible. And Michael, you studied theater in college as well.
Yeah,
yes?
I was a theater minor. And
what was your major?
I was an English major.
Okay.
We didn't have a theater major.
So you had to like just have it as your.
But yeah, I think when I came to Chicago, that's why I did stand up, because I would audition for stuff and everyone was so good. I was like, well, I need to go somewhere where you just have to sign your name.
Just show up for that.
Yeah.
Well, it's one of the most remarkable theater groups in the city of Chicago is celebrating their 20th season. Is this correct? Your 20th season?
Wow.
20th in studio are Catherine and Delia. Am I saying your names correctly? Well, let me find your microphones. That's probably the better part. Delia Ford, the literary manager for Babes with Blades, and Catherine Mahlers, the board member for Babes with Blades. Are these accurate titles? I don't want to get any of this wrong.
Yes, you are correct.
Excellent. Congratulations on 20 years.
Thank you very much.
And have you been there for, how long have you been with the group?
A whopping year and a half.
Oh, all right then. So it had to be kind of cool to come into a group that has such a long-standing tradition, but also they must love having fresh eyes come in too.
Yeah, it's actually been really great, and I wasn't expecting to become board president right away, but here I am. So
congratulations.
There you go.
Boop. Yeah. Where are you from originally?
I'm actually from the suburbs of Chicago, out in Streamwood, Elgin area.
And
live in the city now.
And how old were you when you got involved in the theater? Were you a little girl? Always dreaming about.
Actually, I'm not a theater person.
Oh, hello. Business person.
Yes, I am. I'm a business owner, but I do have an English degree.
Oh, there you go.
So, and work with numbers. So, who knew?
So. I didn't know that was possible. Wait a minute. That's blowing my mind. And, okay, so you are. So, wait, Catherine? That's Catherine and Delia. So, Delia, you are the literary manager. And tell us what the literary manager does for Babes with Blades.
Well, a big part of Babes with Blades' mission is to create scripts that are going to enable women to do what we do, which is stage combat, telling women's stories, so that there are more in the general canon. And so we have open door policy, more or less, accepting scripts which feature women in all kinds of roles, but that the stories are all women-driven. And every year we choose three scripts to develop. So we will start with an internal read, just a bunch of actors sitting around a living room reading the play out loud, record it for the playwright. We have a discussion about it afterwards. What did we like? What's not working? What don't we understand? Whose story is it? What's the takeaway? And we also record that discussion, send it off to the playwright, and they send us a new script, or a revised script, I should say, in about 4 months, and we read it again.
Okay.
And then another 3 or 4 months later, we have the play read for a public audience, and because we are a stage combat theater company, we include at least one staged fight during the reading. So
okay, during the reading even. Yeah. And is this a blend of original productions, original plays written by someone inside the theater, or and then plays that have already been done somewhere else?
Most of the plays are brand new.
Okay.
Plays that are seeking development generally have not yet had an audience, although one of the ones for the festival that's coming up this weekend, has already had an LA production, but the playwright was very fascinated with our process and said, you know, I want to go through this with you guys. So we do have one coming up next weekend that has had a live audience.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Women of 4G.
Women of 4G. These are women who live in an apartment building? In
there. No, they're not. They're on a spaceship.
Wait, what? I did not see that coming. The women of, well, 4G, because it's a, for the gravity.
Women that, with old cell phones.
That's a speed. Is that the measurement of speed?
4G? No, it's not. I'm trying to remember what it stands
for. That's
okay. For, but,
I didn't mean to put
you on the
spot.
Wasn't there a comic strip called Apartment 4G? I'm serious.
Oh, I don't know.
Very possibly.
Okay.
All
very
right,
possibly.
Then. I throw all kinds of things. It's all good.
This particular one is, it's kind of a closed door mystery. The closed door being is that they're isolated on a spaceship and who could possibly have killed this person. And I don't think that's a spoiler because it opens
right. It
opens with that.
Gotcha. And when did you join the Babes of Blades?
I've been there about 10 years.
Okay, so half the time.
Yeah.
How have things changed in regards to the audience and the kind of plays that you're putting on? Because there's so much that's gone on culturally for women and the images of women, whether it's behind or in front of the scenes.
Yeah. The plays... the Babes started doing showcases. They were, you know, hey, come see these scenes that we've put together, one night only, come see it, it'll be fun. And then after several years of that, they decided to be a producing body. And so they started doing all-female Shakespeare every other year. And they started having the play development program, and they started having a contest, which was bringing in scripts and that the winner would, in fact, be produced. And so the plays have evolved with what's going on culturally, more or less, although we do have period pieces and we do have, for example, something happening in space coming up.
Right. Something a little different.
Yeah. So we do run the gamut of genres. A couple years ago, we had a play called Promise of a Rose Garden, which was about women Marines. And so that was a new thing. And there was a lot in the news at the time about women in the Marines sort of breaking through barriers. And it was timely in that way.
Oh, that's extraordinary. And Catherine, what did you think? Were you familiar with Babes Blades when you joined the company a year and a half ago?
Yeah, I was very familiar with them. I had been to a couple of different plays and then actually... Promise was my first recruitment, but it was just shocking because they use such minimal
set.
Thank you. Sorry,
that's
still learning terminology.
Budget.
Yeah,
but the story itself was so compelling, mm-hmm. and even in that time period, which is just 2 years ago, they've elevated everything. You know, just. The tech that we're using now is a little bit more elevated. We're doing a little more with closed captioning.
Oh, great.
We're trying to work with more of the intersectionality of things. So we're definitely bringing in more things that we haven't done in the past. So it's really exciting to see as everything changes and evolves culturally, so is the theater that is coming out from this wonderful group.
When we come back, we'll talk more about the festival. It's going to be Saturday, May 19th and Sunday, May 20th. It's a Fighting Words Festival. The Babes with Blades Theater Company is continuing their 20th anniversary season, Origins. And we're going to talk more about this festival in just a moment. Hang out in the studio with Scott Santis and Michael Palsak. How's the popcorn?
It's delicious.
Excellent. Enjoy. There you go. More to this on 720 WGN. I have fortune cookies, man. The theater group Babes with Blades, a Seller Theater Company, is celebrating their 20th anniversary season, Origins, and they're launching a new festival, the Fighting Words Festival. Joining me in studio are Delia Ford, who is a literary manager for Babes with Blades, and Catherine Mahlers, who is the board president of the board. That's I'm upgrading you. I don't even know if that's really what you said.
It is an upgrade, yes.
All right. Welcome to the studio. We also have Scott Stantis in studio with us and comedian Michael Palasak. And tell us a little bit about this. First of all, what is the Fighting Words Festival?
The Fighting Words Festival is the culmination of a year-long development process for three different scripts. And this is the first year we're doing all three scripts in one weekend. So we're calling it a festival instead of randomly scattering them throughout the year. So
yeah, that fits on a poster a little better.
It does. We did rename the play development program Fighting Words a few years back, because before that we just called it New Play Development, which was sort of bland.
Fighting Words is a great name for this.
Yep.
Yeah,
well done.
I feel like there's some domestic stuff I want to see.
We like domestic violence. Yeah, I hate to say it. We like it theatrically. We do not approve of it in the home.
It seems like,
but in a sort of like get back at somebody.
Theater has like the strongest domestic fights, like that Osage County thing.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Good point. Did you see Killer Joe? Yikes. Okay. So this is Saturday, May 19th and Sunday, May 20th. You can go to babeswithblades.org, and you have something very important to tell the audience about these tickets.
They're free.
What?
Dun, 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 dun.
You should absolutely, however, go and make a reservation online just in case we get a little full. But it would be absolutely free to come in. And we bribe our audiences with, you know, food, snacks and stuff.
Oh, really?
So,
look at that.
We're
not messing around.
No, you are not.
At the end of each reading, there has been a discussion with the audience and the playwrights. I believe all three of them are coming to town for this festival so that they can get feedback right there on the spot on what's working, what's not. Again, mm-hmm. the things that we're taking away from the story, that sort of thing.
Have you been to a reading, a stage reading, Scott? Have you had the opportunity?
I went to Yes.
Well,
it was the remember the Superfan sketch? They actually made this into a movie script, which thankfully for all of us never got produced.
It didn't happen.
But they had a live reading.
Oh my god!
That was at the comedy festival.
Yeah, George went and Coach. Coach showed up.
That's hysterical. That was during the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival that we did.
I remember my friends worked on it.
That's really funny. Well, this will be something where people can really, like you said, get an idea for what the process, which is amazing too. Watch plays that are being developed. And there are, I love that this is like places from around the world. The one play is set in the English countryside. The other is in medieval Scotland. And as you mentioned, 4G is in space. That's so much fun. Do you want to tell us a little bit about each one of these plays?
Sure, absolutely. So The Lady Demands Satisfaction is, in fact, yes, all the entendres intended there.
Excellent.
The Lady Demands Satisfaction is actually our Joining Sword and Pen competition winner. And this playwright, Arthur Jolly, has now won 3 times.
Wow.
He's amazing. He gets us. He writes lovely, lovely, fun theater for us. And so we're very excited to have him back. And it's a farce. This is a farce. And it's interesting because the other plays he wrote for us were not farces. But this one is. So it's he's showing a little range here. And then Women of 4G, like I said, it's sort of a closed door murder mystery. There's a dead body in space and we got to figure out who did it. And then there's,
and how do you get rid of it?
Well,
that sounds terrible. So,
they have like those capsules.
I'm thinking of the 100 or something, like that exploded.
Right. Or something from Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Yep.
And then the third script, the one that we will be reading on Sunday evening, is The Witches of Burnham. So that is the other side of the Macbeth script. We're following the weird sisters through, you know, what drives them, what motivates them, why are they doing this to Macbeth? And our playwright for that, Sarah Murdoch, has come up with some really interesting theories about why they're going about this in the first place.
Gotcha.
And how long it's been going on.
Ooh.
So
is it presented like it were happening now, or is it like back then?
Oh no, it's that's the medieval Scotland
at the time of excellent. Yeah. Have you had a chance to go through any of these scripts yet,
I have not. Actually, it's Strictly Ensemble that does it.
Okay. So Catherine's, you don't get a chance. You don't get to like, ooh.
I get to watch like everybody else. So.
This is wonderful. Excellent.
She gets to come and give feedback.
Can I ask you guys, my sons were really into stage combat. They took a number of classes and would have contusions and open sores and all sorts of stuff. How many injuries a week, say?
Well, that's why you train.
Well, if you're doing it right, you shouldn't be getting hurt. That's one of the things. I'm actually working at on a play at a high school right now, and I tell the combatants that it's all very well and good to make it look real, but that if you're in a play that's engaged for, you know, 8 shows a week for 6 months, you can't go home every day with new bruises. So the technique should be, first of all, protecting you from any danger. Second of all, selling the story to the audience. And third of all, be something that carries the story forward. There's one problem. Sometimes we get a script and it's like someone clearly just dropped a fight into the middle of it because they knew we were a fighting company. Like, no. See, the fights have to be justified.
Barefoot in the park with swords.
Before we go to the break, I just want to tell you that that Delia has performed Cyrano, Three Musketeers, No Exit, and has and Fighting in the Dark Mist, and also used to save the world 3 to 5 times a day in Waterworld at Universal Studios Hollywood. When we come back, let's ask her what her favorite what her favorite weapon is. More after this on 720 WGN. I just told my guest Delia that she has 30 seconds to catch us up on everything she wants to make sure that you know about, in addition to the great festival May 18th and 19th for Babes with Blades. Tell us about the writers and directors.
All right. Our playwrights are, for The Lady Demand Satisfaction, is Arthur Jolly, and the director is Morgan Manassa, and the fights will be choreographed by Samantha Kaufman. For The Witches of Burnham, that's Sarah Murdoch, playwright, Andrea Diamond, director, and Chloe Baldwin, fight choreographer. And for Women of 4G, Lisa Hersig directing, Maureen Yasko doing the fights, and the playwright is Amy Toft from LA.
Outstanding. And again, tickets are at babeswithblades.org for information. This is going to be at the Straw Dog Theater at 1802 West Bernice Avenue, right here in Chicago. Tickets, again, once again, just so you know, are
free.
Free. So go ahead and grab your tickets so they know how many people are coming. That would be helpful for everybody.
That does help.
Yeah,
please.
It's good better for planning. And how many snacks to buy?
Yeah.
By the way, before we go to the news, what is your favorite weapon to use personally and on stage?
Well, my stainless steel water bottle is good for street fighting, but I like the broadsword.
All right, broadsword it is, just so that we know. I just want to make sure. I have to try a few.
Is it legal to get in a fake fight in public if the police don't know?
That's an interesting question.
You gotta get a license for that. Thank you so much, ladies, for joining us. Congratulations on 20 years.
Thank you very much.
Your production company for Babes with Blades. Go to babeswithblades.org. After the news, we have another guest for theater Thursday. We're gonna talk about Chris's birthday belt fest. You know, some of us celebrate our birthdays by saying thank you on Facebook. By the way, I want to say happy birthday to Scott Santos. I'm so sorry. What did you do for your birthday?
Worked, and
you
then
worked?
Went out to dinner.
Michael, when's your birthday?
June 26th.
Okay, I'll remember that. Scott, can you remind me of his birthday, and I'll celebrate both your birthdays in June?
June
26th. I'm so sorry, I missed yours.
Sure.
Did you have a fundraiser for your birthday?
I did not.
Okay, well, our guest is going to do that. Our guest...
Way better than me. Okay,
and
thanks.
Better than most of us. What are you talking about?
Set him up.
Chris Pasternak is celebrating his birthday, and he has Chris's Birthday Belt Fest coming up on May 14th. Chris, happy birthday.
Thank you.
When is your birthday?
It's actually May 16th.
Okay. So you're doing a birthday week, including,
sure.
Is this a performance? Is this, tell us what your fundraiser is going to be all about and why.
Sure. The Belt Fest, actually, history goes back to 2009.
Uh-huh.
I was diagnosed HIV positive and taken care of ever since then by the great folks at Howard Brown Health. And a couple years ago, I was looking for a way to give back, to say thank you to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured, what better way to do that than do the thing that I do best, which is put on a show. Mm-hmm. So Beltfest is a benefit concert featuring over 20 musical theater performers from right here in Chicago, singing Broadway songs you know and Broadway songs you've never heard of. And 100% of the proceeds go to Howard Brown.
Excellent. What a great idea. And you brought with you Lauren Paris, who's performing in in this incredible celebration. Cool. Are you? Have you been friends with Chris for a while?
Yeah, we've been friends for almost 5 years.
Now I'm reading that he has an encyclopedic knowledge of musicals.
This is accurate.
And how does that present itself in normal conversations with him?
It can be alarming. For those of us that know him, we're not surprised anymore. It's something we're very used to. But for those that don't and who come to one of his many cabarets that he puts on, as he said, I think people are rather shocked in the best way possible, because this person gets on stage and at first it's a lot. You're like, this is a lot of information I don't know that's all coming at me at once. And then people sit there and are like, wow, I had no idea about all this. He does it in such a great way that is so fluid. It tells such a story as the night goes on. And I have had friends in the theater and friends who have never been to a show come to these cabarets. This is our fourth one, right, Chris?
Yes.
And how did you collect this vast knowledge of musicals? I mean, from a young age? Because, I mean, I was just telling the story last night that I grew up only on, like, I didn't get to hear any music, really. I didn't hear, like, I wasn't listening to the radio. First time I ever heard, like, AC/DC or Queen was when I was, like, 8 or 9 years old. All I knew was all the music from Mary Poppins and from, Wizard of Oz, same year. But,
very good.
Yeah, no, it's, I only have a little sprinkling of that, but like Singing in the Rain and all those things. When did you start getting fascinated? When did you develop that fascination?
I remember from the youngest age. It's so funny you say Wizard of Oz, because I wore out my first copy of Wizard of Oz, the VHS tape.
Right.
And my mom worked at the public library, and I think she just recognized that I had such a fascination, and then she would bring home all the Rodgers and Hammerstein classics. And then I just started checking out books and reading. And there was one summer in high school I called my Summer of Sondheim. I went to the public library and rented every single cast recording and piano score for every Sondheim musical and followed along in my bedroom. And I just tell people, I'm like your uncle who knows every baseball statistic for
right.
his team.
Exactly.
It's because it's so fascinating to me. I make no effort to remember it. It just is so interesting. It just stays.
And it speaks to you. I mean, that's the thing that, like, people always give me a hard time for not knowing a lot of music when it comes to pop culture and current music. But I'm like, I like music when I'm in my car and I'll enjoy it or whatever, but it doesn't necessarily land for me. When I hear it, I enjoy it. But there are certain things that I am fascinated by and drawn to, and it speaks to me, and I'm passionate about it. And I love that you have that. What have been some of your favorite live performances? Have you found that you're drawn to like local performances more than the national touring groups? Or is it both?
It's definitely both.
Yeah.
I mean, on one end, I have the year that I took a road trip down to St. Louis to see Jennifer Holliday in the 30th anniversary production of Dreamgirls.
Sure.
And I don't think that I think I held my breath for the whole show. I was just so excited to be there. But then on the other hand, one of my favorite things about BoutFest is over the decade I've lived and worked in Chicago doing musical theater, I have made friends with so many insanely talented people. I can't sing a note. You wouldn't pay me a penny.
Right, I'm right there with you, my friend. I cannot sing.
But I have met people like Lauren, who has a voice that literally will stun you. It's so good. And it's just been a pleasure to get to know all these people, and a privilege to put them all on stage together for one night for a good cause.
This is so strange, because yes. My brother actually hosts a show in Madison, Wisconsin on the weekends called Better Living Through Show Tunes.
Oh,
on WORT on Sundays.
Oh, you can tune into this.
So I need this.
You can be on it. I mean, I'm sure. You can.
He's got connections.
You know, I'm from Wisconsin. I have some relatives in Madison. Right. I love Madison.
Yeah, it's a great town to be from.
Wow.
I'm actually from Appleton, and I say that.
Okay, so Frank's Pizza Palace is one of my favorite places. Oh my God.
Frank's Pizza Palace.
I'm just saying, mounds of mushrooms.
Yes, but I'm going to bet the palace is not made out of pizzas, so that's just a lie.
But it's such a great
it's a
Italian.
Palace of pizza.
Yes, it is a palace of pizza.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
See, because like Mars Cheese. Castle? It's not made out of cheese.
No,
it's a lie.
But it's also not a planet.
Correct.
Mars.
One time, Lauren and I took a road trip to Wisconsin.
Wait, what?
Well, no. The
hold on. One second.
It's not an actual planet.
It's not, right. It's Mars.
It's like a castle.
Yes, I'm sorry. One time you and Lauren, yes.
We went to Wisconsin and we ate nothing but cheese curds the entire day that we were there.
We had three times.
Both the fried and the squeaky.
Well, see now, squeaky.
Yeah.
Well, you know your cheese curds, and Michael's done plenty of work in Wisconsin, your squeaky cheese and your fried cheese curds.
What's the difference between squeak? I've never heard anything described as squeaky that I've eaten.
What?
Hold on.
If you have to ask.
I'll say
you'll never know.
It's very. I like it better when it's saltier too. The squeaky cheese, it's salty. Yeah. There, yes. We might have a bag. I'll see if I can go find
fried.
Some.
Is
no, it's not
difference?
Fried.
Oh,
it's right out of the bag.
That's just the difference.
Right out of the bag.
You
by
could
the way,
have just said that instead of being mean or something.
But didn't you say you're from Wisconsin?
No,
he's from Indiana.
Oh, I'm so, I take yes. it back. Yes. A little bit.
It's okay, you just weren't listening.
Wow, that's because people were talking over each other. Let's bring
really
it
nervous,
in.
Okay.
Let's bring it in. We're here for the birthday boys. Kind of. Scott, I apologize to you.
That's all right.
But
June 26th.
Chris's birthday is coming up on May 16th, and on May 14th, he's celebrating with an incredible fundraiser for Howard Brown Health. You can go to uptownunderground.net because this is going to be at the Uptown Underground at 4707 North Broadway. Let's take a break here and find out more about the performances, including Lauren, who I'm looking through your bio. I can't cover this. I'll have it all memorized by the time we come back. More after this on 720 WG. I'm kidding. That's also for you, Scott. But mostly for our guest, Chris. Joining me in studio is the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, Scott Stantis. He's also a member of the editorial board, be that as it may. Also, I don't know why I said that. I apologize to everybody involved.
Because you read our page.
Well, you know, there was that whole thing with the who you chose for the presidential campaign. Anyway, also Michael Palasak, yes. who is performing at Zany's on Wells. Gary Johnson, seriously? Anyway, my mom
yes.
did not end her subscription, just so you know. She changed her mind. Anyway,
oh, thank goodness.
You're welcome. So Michael Palasak is performing at the Zany's on Wells through Sunday. Go to zanies.com. He's headlining. It's a great show. Highly recommended. Plus, you never know who's going to stop by. Tonight, they had Dwayne Kennedy and Pat McGann doing guest sets, so that's exciting.
And Sunday's free if you're a mom.
Sunday's free if you're a mom, and your guest is half off.
Yes.
Excellent. And if also, to continue the celebration next week on May, well, not next week, the very next day, Monday, May 14th at 8 p.m. at the Underground, the Uptown Underground, Chris is celebrating his birthday, Chris Pasternak. Am I saying that correctly?
You are. High five.
All right, then. Hello. Thank you. And one of the performers for that celebration is Lauren Paris, who's originally from the West Coast. You're all the way from Seattle?
I am.
I read this correctly?
That is correct.
Is that why you like fish so much? It really doesn't matter.
It's one
where,
of the reasons.
Is it
yes.
one of how do we compare, though, to like the fish?
We don't.
Okay. I sense that. You know, I was at a restaurant in Los Angeles one time, and they make guacamole at the table, and he cut open the avocado in front of us, and I was like, what a risk, right? Because stop it. Because in Chicago, you might not have a perfectly wonderful avocado on the inside when you cut it open. The meaty part might have spots and stuff.
I thought you were concerned for his safety because he was wielding a
knife.
She
knew exactly what I was saying.
I did.
All right.
How perfect. Every avocado in California is perfect.
Oh, it's tickled by
and
that.
So apparently so is the fish. Yeah. It's all... How about oysters? Where do you go for oysters here?
Oysters are my favorite food.
Okay. Have you been to Shaw's?
Question. Of course.
Okay.
Fine, yes. Oyster Fest is always really exciting. Kinmont was my favorite. They closed a couple of years ago.
She's telling me about places I can't go to.
But I do want, well, because I want to brag. I'm sorry. I want to talk about myself, so I apologize.
That's fine.
On their opening night of the restaurant a few years ago, I went and they had an oyster eating contest and I won.
Ooh.
It's my claim to fame.
How many did you eat?
I ate 50 and I was only stopped because the person, you know, behind me quit. So they were like, you have to stop. And I was like, but can I keep going?
Because I want to show off at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should let you go to the buzzer. I don't
to the buzzer.
Right?
I mean, set that mark high.
Have you ever been in a food eating contest of any type?
In high school.
I did.
Ooh. Yeah.
What'd you eat?
Cheese curds.
No, I don't remember what it was. I just ate those six crackers in a minute one time.
Oh yeah, on the air. Oh. He did saltines on the air, and he had to talk while his mouth was all salt. Have you ever done a food eating contest?
No, I've not.
How about you, Chris?
No.
No, I did one once. You never come on. When you do a food eating contest, you never forget what it was. And yes, I did win, but I was only 9 at Norwood Park Day Camp, and it was lemon meringue pies.
Ooh.
And but you couldn't. You weren't feeding yourself. It was somebody from behind me shoveling the food into my face.
Yes.
And
yeah.
How many?
Four.
Wow.
Four pies.
Four pies?
Congrats!
Well,
full size pie?
Let's be honest. Most of it I was wearing because she was shoveling it into my face.
Oh,
and some of it I ate and some of it I wore. Yeah.
I hope that's on your resume. Mine is on my acting resume.
I don't think I should. Yeah. But yeah, I honestly think that they were just, we just were like, it was more for yucks. Anyway, not what we're here for. Although maybe you'll have lemon meringue pies for me at your birthday party.
And oysters.
And oysters. You don't have to do that. I'm just teasing. So this has been going, you've been having the celebration since 2009? No.
No, when I was diagnosed.
Yes.
The Belt Fest, this is the fourth annual concert.
And so it's all kinds of, do you pick all the music or do you ask your friends to sort of decide what they want to share?
It's half and half.
Okay.
Some people have very definite ideas about what they want to sing, although I have been known to use my veto power.
Oh.
It is my birthday. I don't want to hear a song I don't like.
Give us one of the songs you don't like. What don't you like? What have you vetoed? Tell us. It's okay. I think we're
Finding Neverland.
Okay.
And that entire score just sounds to me like elevator music.
I love it. Excellent.
I was like, no thanks.
And
no,
what about your favorites? What do you request this year? Have you made?
Well, every year ends with the title number from Dreamgirls because it's my all-time favorite musical.
Okay.
And I'm very fortunate to have my friend Donica Lynn, who played Effie in the Porchlight production, lead it every year.
How great is that? I love it. And what do you? Are you? Can we tell us what you're singing, Lauren?
Yes.
Yes.
Sure.
What are you singing?
So I am so excited to sing. I'm singing a couple songs this year. One is a duet with my friend Ryan Lanning. We did a production of Hedwig and the Angry Inch together about 5 years ago. So we are singing from that, Midnight Radio. And then I am singing from a show called If Then, which was Idina Menzel's last show on Broadway.
Okay.
Right?
Most recent. You say last, like,
I know.
She's
I was
not
like,
doing
I guess a little bit like, oh, when
she's
did she,
Disney now. She doesn't need the Broadway. her most recent show, If Then, it's called Always Starting Over.
Okay. Oh, look at the very, I love the even way she says it, but she sings it magnificently.
It's so dramatic.
I know.
I feel all my feelings.
What's a Broadway musical that someone might not know that they should definitely see before they leave the earth?
Oh. Bucket list musical.
Yeah, bucket list. That's a better way.
That's a great question for Chris.
That people like, maybe it's not as popular. Like,
maybe,
you know,
it's like new, but yeah, maybe the, yeah.
Mm. Chris is going to come back to us on that.
Parade, definitely.
Parade?
Oh. Parade is right up there.
Okay. Do you have any favorites from the golden age of musicals from the, you know, from movies?
Yeah, Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, really?
Grew up on that. It's one of my dad's favorite musicals.
Oh, that's sweet.
I just actually had a side gig choreographing a middle school production earlier this year, and I cried every day because I love
like
the show so much.
Old man?
I literally like have the show memorized. I would be prompting the kids when they'd go up on their lines, and there'd be a script nowhere near me.
That's fantastic. I don't know if you watch Gilmore Girls at all, but they had an episode where they're doing Fiddler on the Roof when they're fighting with each other.
Yes.
He's got his boat in her girl. Anyway.
Say no more.
I went too far. Anyway. So what can people expect? There's going to be performances. There's going to be some. Is there going to be some storytelling or talking about the musicals in the way that Lauren was telling us you like sharing with folks?
Yeah, I try and keep that to a minimum because people come for the music.
Okay, fair.
And so I try and let the talent rule the evening.
But your stories illuminate the performances.
What I try and tell people is why the performer or the song has a connection to me in my life. So why this person is singing at Beltfest, or why I picked out this song for someone to sing at Beltfest. So a little bit more of the personal connection to fit with the theme of the evening.
And it has to, you must be someone that is well liked, because Michael, I mean, we do a lot of shows for charity, you know, but we don't always show up for, they're showing up for free. 100% of the proceeds are going to the Howard Brown Health. I love that. Congratulations on having people that like you enough to do that. I mean, Lauren, you know you're not getting paid. I mean, there might be cheese curds.
I'm getting so much for this performance here tonight.
It's all good stuff. I also want to talk a little bit about your career here in Chicago. Tell us about what you've loved the most about the theater scene and some of the productions that you've done that you want to tell us about.
Sure. I think the biggest thing about off-loop theater community here in Chicago. So for anybody listening at home, that's theaters that are not downtown off of Michigan Avenue or State Street. It's just a really close-knit community. It's very supportive. That's indicative of what you were talking about, Patty. That's why all these people show up to sing. So it's a night that we get to share together. And I have friends from a number of shows that I've done. Some of my favorites, Dreamgirls, as I mentioned earlier, that I worked on at Porchlight.
I tell him I've never seen Dreamgirls? Do you think he'll be upset if I tell him I haven't seen it?
I mean, I will be upset, but not till we get off the air.
All right, thank you. I appreciate that.
Just keep me talking and you're safe. Okay. Angela Ingersoll, who is the star of End of the Rainbow at Porchlight.
Okay.
She currently has a PBS special with her Judy Garland concert. She sings every year. And then a show I did for my theater company, Refuge Theater Project, High Fidelity, have a number of the High Fidelity cast members. Of course, Lauren, who just did the most recent show I directed for my theater company as well.
Excellent. So. That sounds like a wonderful celebration.
Do you think musical theater in Chicago has grown a lot since you've been here, or is it about the same or less?
I think the types of musicals that people are willing to produce in the city has grown. Mm-hmm. I remember when I first came to Chicago, I had to travel up a lot to like Apple Tree. in Highland Park to see some of the more risky, you know, obscure, adventurous kind of musicals. Yeah. And now it feels like a lot of people, a lot of different theater companies in the city are doing them, which is really exciting. Because I will always love the, you know, the forgotten ones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Again, Chris's birthday, Beltfest features dozens of award-winning local musical theater performers singing both well-loved and obscure show tunes, and with musical direction by Jeff Award winner Aaron Benham. Am I saying that name correctly as well? Benham? Benham?
Benham.
You can get it wrong. People probably emphasize the ham. Ben Ham. I bet you
no one more than him, actually.
Oh, really? That. Sometimes you got to own that kind of stuff. Enjoy a night of sensational singing from local performers while supporting one of the nation's largest LGBTQ organizations, because 100% of the proceeds go to Howard Brown Health. You can go to uptownunderground.net, and this is going to be at the Uptown Underground at 4707 North Broadway this Monday, coming up at 8 p.m. That's going to be on May 14th at 8 p.m. More after this on 720 WGN. Ooh, Scott Santis and I are a little out of breath because we were on a hunt for squeaky cheese. I wanted to see if we could find some squeaky cheese for Michael Palisade.
Yeah, and then you said...
And then I heard Esmeralda in Weather, and I was like, I should probably...
Yes, it's
get back.
Oh, no, it's Weather!
I think this place is haunted. Someone was... I heard a ghost when
what?
I was here. I heard a ghost when I was sitting in here when you guys were gone.
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
Are you messing with Michael Palisade?
I don't know what you're talking about. I have no idea.
I heard something, and I'm listening to the book It while I'm driving right now, so it's not funny.
What did you hear?
It happened.
Ooh.
Really?
Come on. Michael,
I'm not lying. No.
I believe you, but I want to know if Michael Heidemann was messing with him. He was messing with him, weren't you?
He was alone in there, and I saw that no one was there.
I was going to say, why is it so hard to believe that there's ghosts?
It's not hard to believe, but I can see Michael's Heidemann is enjoying this a lot.
The Tribune Tower is haunted, too.
Yes, it is.
All that construction's moving those ghosts around.
That's true. I was
mad.
I was back there in sales with Scott Santis, and it smells badly. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it was just dead bodies back there.
Oh, no, my office, honest to God, was so bad I couldn't work it. Monday, because I'm right below the men's room, and apparently the construction has cracked pipes or something. Because my God,
when are you getting out? Get out!
Yeah, June 9th is our last day.
Ours is earlier June. I heard they've moved it up a little bit. Is that what you heard, Michael? They've moved it up to early June.
Early June is what I heard. I mean, it's still tentative.
That is going to be a hard day.
Yeah.
My husband was asking me who I think is going to be the last show in this building.
Ooh.
I think
it's got to be you.
No, I think it's actually got to be Nick. I think you do, I'm not sure what day that is. I'd say you do a Sunday night. I don't know how, it depends on the timing of everything, but I think you do Nick, does the last show here, and then Steve Cochran does the first show at the new one.
That makes sense.
I mean, I am technically I'm the last show of the day. Right? And Nick is the first show of the morning, right? Because I start at 11 p.m. I don't know. I don't make these kind of choices.
Where's the new place?
It's across, it's about 6 blocks away by the river, along the river.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so it'll be pretty.
Is it that far? Wait, no. I thought it was
three blocks? No, I don't know.
I thought it was the Mears Vander Row knockoff across the river.
You run down there and back and let me know how far it is.
Okay, I'll be right back.
And apparently it's supposed to have stunning views of the river, so we're excited about
that. That's really cool.
I actually was talking to somebody who works for the station who is black, who said that they are actually worried. They saw my post today about the student who attends Yale. She's a grad student, lives in the grad dorms, and fell asleep in the common room. While she was sleeping, another student came in who was white, turned the lights on and said, "You don't belong here," and then turned around, walked away, and called the police on the sleeping black student. And if you want, you can go to the video, because this is going to be one of those things, again, where someone's going to say, oh, there had to be more to it. It doesn't seem to be anything more to it. The police arrived, and they asked the student for the ID. She was standing in front of her room, had her key, unlocked her own apartment, dorm room for them to demonstrate that she in fact lived there, and they continued to demand she give them her ID, which she ended up doing. Yeah. They ran her name through the system. There's a misspelling in the university, so it took them about 20 minutes to determine that she was in fact a student there. I've been pulled over for actually breaking the law, like speeding and no right on red or something, or maybe blowing a stop sign, or maybe not coming to a complete stop at least.
Yes.
No left turn between 4 and 6 p.m. It's over and done in less than 10 minutes. Here's somebody who took a nap.
Yeah.
And was detained by the police for 20
and it
minutes.
Was in the dorm?
In her building.
Now, this was the woman who turned her in.
Yes.
Who turned in the sleeping person.
Her neighbor.
Yes. This was the second time she'd done it to a person who
to
was...
To a black student in the building. There was a black student in the building, and she did it the second time she's
now,
done it.
Now, we had this discussion off the air. I think it's fascinating, because you said this girl should be expelled. The one who turned... For
that's
the second,
my, that's
second time...
A, that's my rage. That's my rage go-to. They won't, but I mean, there has to be some sort of... And not just the woman at Yale, but for people who do this, who call the cops on black people for barbecuing in the park or for checking out of an Airbnb, because those are the other stories that are also going around.
Well, let's take it back to Trayvon Martin. This is not something. Janine, my wife, said something, and it never occurred to me. And she said, I don't ever or rarely think of my race. We're both very, very white.
Right.
And you just, we go days.
I will attest to that, by the way. I'm not going to say anything about your wife, but you definitely.
What?
Never. Very, very white.
Yes, I'm in fact, I would say I'm Trey white.
You do tan very well.
I do.
Yes.
But I'm very Caucasian. It's not something I think about ever, because the culture doesn't make me think about it ever.
Right.
Now, I can't imagine these experiences, because these are happening more and more. They seem almost benign by Trayvon Martin, because no one gets killed. But there have been videos, I'd say, in the last 10 days to 2 weeks of things like this. Mm-hmm.
Around the country, different parts of the country.
And it's just, I can't imagine what that must be like.
And we can't, because I thought about it. I'm like, well, how would I react? And if I did react in the way I would want to react, I would be okay, because I would just seem like crazy Patty. But I'm not black, and I'll never know what that's like to constantly. And so someone who works for WGN told me they're nervous about going to a new building and having to get to know the new security team from scratch, and like always being questioned, because he's a big dude, right? And he's worried about like, what are they going to look at him differently? Is he going to have to start to build relationships again, because he already has a repertoire with the people who work in this building?
Sure.
And he often feels like he's looked at sideways, as though what are you up to?
Yeah, I.
I know.
I don't know when we're ever going to get over this, because it's a sickness that's been in our country for hundreds of years. We're working on it, and I think we are. I think a lot of people with with good hearts and good interests want to correct this, but my God, it's a slow slog.
Right. I mean, two guys who haven't ordered anything yet because they're waiting for their friend get arrested at a Starbucks.
Yeah, I mean, that's one that's unbelievable. Starbucks is all about hanging around.
Yeah.
That's the business model.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm going to buy a cup of coffee and then spend 12 hours using your Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. That's the business model. How did these guys... And they call the cops? And they're...
Mm-hmm. Well, like, and that's...
What?
There's an interesting article, too, because the instances that we're talking about, Starbucks, the instance at Yale, there's another one in California, and I believe the Airbnb, and I could be wrong about whether the gender of it, but all of them, white women who called the police because they felt threatened or unsafe in a situation with black people, which I thought was interesting, an interesting observation.
Huh.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I don't know if women feel like that's their go-to. The way to defend themselves, protect themselves, is to call the police. I don't know why we do that. And I say we in the sense that, white women, at some point white women have to take responsibility for other white women. I'm Latina, but I don't look Latina. I'm biracial. But, I don't know why we feel unsafe in these situations, why we feel the need to call. I mean, like, if you, think first, why is the logical thing for these people to call the police on black people? I don't understand it. Someone on my Facebook page said, well, maybe they've had bad experiences with black people. Maybe a black person stole their purse. Are we really going to have that conversation? Because I've said this on the air before, whenever we have that conversation, and as you know, I've said this, if I based my relationships on what somebody of a certain gender of a certain race did, I would not associate with white men at all.
I'd be calling the cops on most of this building right now.
Exactly. Right. I mean, I have been sexually assaulted by a white man. My brother was murdered by a white man. That's not how I function. I don't see white men and automatically see a threat. I just know that there are evil people in the world of all races and of all genders. But that's the way I operate.
And then walk.
But I'm not saying I don't know how we get to where,
You walk it back to the point where we're talking about you're waiting for a friend at a Starbucks, or you're asleep in your dorm lobby. And I mean, what? And so, the other the other thing is they call the cops, which may be the only thing they feel they can do. They can't. Although it does sound like she kind of confronted her in this incident.
Right.
At Yale.
So you don't belong here.
That's not really a conversation, is it?
No, you don't belong here. And it has some. And that, even that statement.
Oh yeah.
Carries so much weight to it. You don't belong here. What? So
yeah, that's either a racist movie from the early 60s or every horror film.
Right.
You don't belong here.
I think there needs to be some financial repercussions when people are calling the police, because that's a false... They're falsely calling the police.
Who could be helping other people.
Yeah, something should happen. They should be fined. They should... Some sort of charge.
Now I'm going to get in trouble here, because it sounds to me... I have to watch the video. To be fair, I haven't watched the Yale video, but if they... And I believe my friend Patty, because she...
I watched the whole video. Yeah.
Yeah, so the cops did not de-escalate that situation. They didn't escalate it to the point where someone got arrested or bludgeoned or shot.
Nope.
But they didn't de-escalate it. It wasn't like...
They would not let her leave. They demanded her identification. One guy was on the radio. And it was funny because he was like, so what were you doing up there? Right? And like, you could take it as when he said that, he was like, well, what are you working on? And and she took it as... You know, are you trying to ask me to justify what I was doing in my own building? Do you know what I'm saying? And she was like, I'm not going to talk to you about this. We're not having small talk.
Yeah.
And I mean, she's right. She was in the middle of the night working on a paper. She's a graduate student, and they're calling it in. He's on the radio. You can hear the person at dispatch, you know, trying to get the information, the spelling of her name. She was sleeping in the common area in her own building.
I would like to think that if you're an Ivy League school, that the police would also be smarter.
I would hope for that.
I guess not.
Okay, that was a weird moment too. So it's a male and a female police officers, both white.
Yeah.
And at one point, a black officer arrives, and he stands the ground too of like, no, we need to make sure you are who you say you are.
Yeah.
Right. Even though she had opened her dorm room with her key to show them this is my room.
Yeah.
Right. I had all my notebooks and my laptop with me in the common room.
Yeah.
And they said, well, we there was a complaint filed against you, so we need to make sure that you... I mean, but I want to know, and I guess they've admonished the woman who called, but did they also go ask for that woman's ID? Like, who are you to make this report that this person was sleeping in? She's clearly shown us she can get into her room.
That's a good way to make sure people don't think you're homeless and crashing the board. Be like, oh, this person's not supposed to be here.
Right.
Right.
But I
don't
think I
checked the person they called.
So we have to get going because I know Scott. I told you I would let you go, and we have Tom Hush coming in to talk about the Film Critics Film Festival.
Oh,
I
want
to just... There's a listener who posted this today. It says things you can't do while black: drive while black, backyard while black, coffee while black, golf while black, Yale while black, barbecue while black, be black while black. For the record, I find all those things above personally reprehensible. And then there's a meme when white people see black people enjoying life, and it's the Tom and Jerry cat picking up the phone and calling the police. So, thank you so much for joining us, Scott.
Thanks for having me.
Everyone follow Scott on Twitter at sstantis.
No, Scott Stantis.
At Scott Stantis. Sometimes I have things locked in my head. Follow him on Twitter at Scott Stantis, and also go to chicagotribune.com/Stantis.
Yes.
And you can follow The Prickly City and all of his work that he does every single day.
And The Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
Excellent. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
Happy birthday, effort.
Thank
I'm
you.
So sorry I didn't know. The Chicago Critics Film Festival is returning to the Music Box for its sixth year. And to tell us about that, we're welcoming Tom Hush in studio. Michael, have you ever met Tom Hush? I don't think you have.
Just now?
Just right now? Just this very moment?
Well, like, I think you're walking in, yeah, and then the introduction happened.
I think that was it.
Yeah. Hey, Tom.
Hey.
How'd you get involved with the Film Critics Film Festival? Wait, the Chicago Critics Film Festival.
So I do a podcast here at WGN Plus called No Coast Cinema, where we covered the local Chicago film scene, and saw the Critics Festival was coming into town. I was like, well, I gotta go to this. So just said, hey, can I come by, watch a bunch of movies, and tell you what I think? And they said, yeah, absolutely. So there I was.
So are these films that are from all over the country, or are these all over the world, or just Chicago based?
So these are all films that have played at different film festivals.
Mm-hmm.
So Sundance and Toronto and all those kinds of things. And then the Chicago critics all get together, and then they pick out the ones that they like the best, and then they bring them here to Chicago so everyone can experience them.
Excellent. Okay, I'm looking at this. Now, Michael, did you go see one of these today? I thought I saw you post a picture of one of these posters.
Yes, I did.
Eighth grade?
eighth grade, yeah, by Bo Burnham, who is the comedian who's really hot on Netflix. He's all over the place.
Who's Bo Burnham? Do you know Bo Burnham?
Yeah, he got really huge on YouTube like 10 years ago by playing music. He does like Bo raps and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a great comedian, and this is his first foray into the movie industry, so it's kind of cool. It's a great take on an awkward eighth grader, and I'm sure that Tom could tell you more about it. He stuck around for the whole time. I had to leave. I had to go to work.
Was Bo Burnham there?
Yeah, he actually did a Q&A right afterward.
And how did it go?
Does he play an eighth grader?
No, believe it or not.
He can pull it off.
Yeah, totally. He's very fresh-faced. Yeah. But,
you mean little guy.
He wrote and directed this one, and it's like Michael said, super awkward, but in the best possible way. Elsie Fisher, who people might recognize her voice from a while ago, she was one of the children in Despicable Me. She played the youngest one, Agnes.
Oh, cool.
Now she's this eighth grader. Bo was there to do a great Q&A, talked a lot about the movie. Even at one point, one of the people asking a question was an actual eighth grader.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he brought him up on stage and like sat down on the stage with him and just talked with him, you know, took his question and everything like that.
That's so funny because like Bo is probably really, he had a lot of success at a very young age, right. And he's always been like the young guy. Now he has people that are actually younger than him
right.
in the industry.
And also a film that will probably appeal to a wide range of ages.
Yeah, it really doesn't pull any punches though. So definitely if you're bringing, I would honestly suggest like when this gets a wide release this coming summer, don't be afraid to bring your eighth grader because they're really going to identify with a lot of this stuff. He worked really hard in getting this right. But It puts Elsie Fisher into a lot of really difficult situations.
Yeah.
And these are important things to talk about. In the Q&A, he talked with this eighth grader about, like, you know, there's some situations with boys. And he really wanted to impart, like, this is supposed to be a teaching moment in a way.
Yeah.
So I would definitely suggest, if you can take your eighth grader to go see it, or someone that is going to be in eighth grade, especially people going into high school, see this. But be warned, it really is a little bit raw.
Well, because kids are seeing more, you know, we want to, as much as we want to protect our kids and maintain their innocence, obviously there's so much, it's more now than ever before because it's all online. And if your child isn't telling you everything that's happening at school and then on top of it, whether it's texting or, you know, social media, the things that they have access to or the other kids, because I was on Michael, you know, that awkward meeting we had when I was laughing about the title of your podcast, Two Guys, One Album.
Yes. How could I forget? I do remember
that. Yes. Yeah, so our bosses are not familiar with sort of the play on a title with that.
Yeah.
Well, I was on a bus with a bunch of seventh graders last year, and they were talking about the original.
Oh, boy.
And I couldn't believe that these kids knew what that would do. Michael, do you know what's in reference to?
I
don't.
Didn't,
yeah.
I've never. I don't know.
Okay,
no, like, I've heard things
gonna,
and I don't
safe
listen
bet.
Hard.
I'm
no,
gonna,
I really don't.
I'm going to preserve your innocence.
I haven't seen it.
And
I mean, like, I've heard talk, but I'm just like, how does that? I don't know.
Yeah, no. But these kids were like talking about, and what do you do? I mean, this might be why I should never chaperone any of the things. Because I'm in the front of the bus going, what?
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about, I mean, like, they have their phones out, I don't know what they were showing each other.
Oh, no.
But I can't, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, so that makes sense.
It's a huge part of this movie, too, is that a lot of it has to do with performance, both online and in person. Bo talked a lot about that during the Q&A, because that's been a big part of his stand-up in the past, this idea of performing. And, you know, the main character, played by Elsie Fisher, spends a lot of time performing online, taking, you know, Snapchat pictures with the filter on and trying to appear happy. She does. There's this kind of framing device where she intermittently does these video blogs that get uploaded to YouTube. Nobody watches them, but it's all about like, oh, this is how to be yourself. And this is how you know real friends from online friends. And the way it's done is really interesting because she'll be doing those videos as she's learning how to try and do these things. She acts like an expert, like, I've got it all put together. When in reality, she's going to a pool party and she's having like anxiety attacks and trying to learn how to put herself out there.
And have to be in a bathing suit in front of her whole class.
Exactly.
That was one of the worst days of my life, was there was going to be a pool party. My mom will attest to this. Oh my God, in the dressing room with the bathing suits. I don't like my boob showing here. My thighs are too big. Yeah, it was traumatizing. So I can only imagine. I want to see this movie. We have to take a break for the news. When we come back, let's talk some more about the other films that are at the Chicago Critics Film Festival. This week was the Chicago Critics Film Festival, and joining me in studio is Tom Hush, WGN's very own. Also joining me in studio is comedian Michael Palasak, fresh off the stage at Zany's, where he's appearing through Sunday. You might have seen him just a couple weeks ago on the Late Late Show with James Corden.
Corden. Yeah.
And very excited to have you back in studio. I know it's twice this week, but he travels, and then yeah. I get greedy, and I'm like, come back in studio.
Yeah.
You got to go see him, Tom, if you have time this weekend.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, well, this will probably be helpful. There we go. That'll do it. Yes, that'll do it. It's a Zany's on Wells in Old Town, and everyone can go to zanys.com. Mm-hmm. And also follow him on your Instagram account.
Yeah, Michael Palasak.
Traditional spelling.
Traditional spelling, Michael, and then P-A-L-A, S as in Sam, C as in cat, A-K. Not all those words, but just the letters.
Yes.
Yes.
Has anyone ever asked you to just go with Sack, Palasak?
Oh, like the other spelling?
Yeah.
There's relatives that just dropped the C.
Right.
But we kept it, so I keep it. My grandpa kept it, so we keep it.
I think that's very honorable of you to have kept
it. I love it. Yeah.
You didn't take the easy route.
No,
one could find you, but
well, I'm kidding. Jeff Dunham couldn't pronounce my name on my first ever TV thing.
Oh, nice.
And people were like, you gotta change your name. No one I cared about, but like, oh, that's so funny. And I was like, yeah.
I think Tim Meadows had to do his, from when we did our TBS.
Yeah.
Actually, there have been, I think, two or three of the ones that, like, the Nick Mom's Night Out.
Yeah.
I was, like, walking up the runway, like, the walkway to the stage, and they had to do it again.
Vasquez?
Oh, it happens.
Vasquez?
All the time. Vasquez. Tim Meadows said Vasquez. I had to stop.
You know, the Spanish Q, yeah. That's cua.
Just like quesadilla. I know.
Quesadilla.
I understand. Yes. It's in my act.
La Quinta Inn.
See, how hard is that? How hard is that? So the Chicago Critics Film Festival was at the Music Box this week, and a lot of these things catching my eye, of course. We have in studio with us Tom Hush, who was just telling us about Eighth Grade, which is directed by Bo Burnham. There's also, there were several other movies. Did you have a favorite of the ones that you viewed?
Yes, I did. And honestly, it came opening night. First one I saw was probably my favorite of the whole week. It's called Fast Color. Mm-hmm. Directed by Julia Hart and starring Gugu Mbatha-Raw and Lorraine Toussaint. Mbatha-Raw, you may
David Strathairn, by the way. Yes,
absolutely. And you may have seen Gugu Mbatha-Raw recently in Wrinkle in Time. She also appeared in Netflix's Cloverfield Paradox. They're the one that they bought off of Paramount. And basically, it's this sort of superhero movie, but not really a superhero movie. It is a leading cast of very strong women of color. And it is, I think it's one of the most spectacular movies I've seen in the last few months. It really hit me hard. I loved almost every minute of it. And I think, especially in this time where we have things like Avengers Infinity War going on, it's nice to watch a kind of sci-fi superhero sort of thing that isn't so heavy on the sci-fi superhero elements of it. It's much more character driven.
Oh, that sounds great.
That's great.
Yeah.
Because that's that thing. I think that's the biggest thing about superhero movies that I like. I like the ones that are usually the first one because it's about that person being that person. But then once you combine 20 superheroes, like how do you cover? How do they people still?
This just focuses in on three fantastic women with disability that I don't want to go too much into because it is tied into the plot.
Yeah.
But it's more about a learning to reconnect with yourself, with your family, atoning for your past transgressions and trying to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I really liked about it is that it sort of eschews violence for more peaceful resolution.
Mm-hmm.
When we watch a lot of superhero movies, buildings get destroyed, things blow up, and people
go violent.
Bam, boom, pop. This one really kind of takes a different route. It treats violence with a lot of, a much heavier sort of meaning. And it tries to go around those sort of things and try to show a much more peaceful way to get to things. I think that's because it is a female-driven movie. It has those more feminine characteristics, and it kind of fights against those more traditionally masculine characteristics, much to its credit. I think that's the best part about it.
That sounds fantastic. So that's Fast Color. And now, when are these? These are movies that have gotten distributors that'll be in theaters at some point?
Some of them, yes. Some of them, no. For example, Eighth Grade is going to be distributed by A24, which is distributed. They did Moonlight. They've done, oh gosh, they've done so many over the last few years. They've been on a total tear since 2012. But then, like, Fast Color, I don't think it has a distributor yet. It's hopefully, like, they want these on the festival circuit so that someone will see them, people will talk about them, and they're going to get that wider release. But Fast Color, we'll just have to see. It was produced by Jordan Horowitz, who produced La La Land.
Yeah.
So there's a very good chance that it will get picked up. It's got big names in it, but we'll just have to kind of see.
Yeah, that sounds great. Now, one of these sounds interesting because it looks a little familiar to me. So they did an anniversary release as well.
Yes.
A viewing of Jurassic Park. I can't believe it's been 25 years.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and I was born November of 1993. So a few months after that actually came out, I never got to see it in theaters.
Oh.
I got it on, you know, we had it on VHS. Watch it at home, one of my favorites. So this was a really special experience for me as a big fan, and I think a really special experience for a lot of people who were at the screening because they brought their kids.
How
and
fun.
It was so fun. I'm sitting next to these, like, you know, 7 and 8 year olds who they saw Jurassic World, but they never saw the original. They never saw how special it was, that mixture of early CGI and practical effects that just works so well.
And I think for Spielberg too, it was one of those movies where he really got one of his strengths is showing what's not there, right? Is giving you that when the goat,
the cup,
right? That the vibrations from the stomping is obviously they're getting closer, but when the goat's just gone, but sometimes he has in the past been over the top with some things, but even when the goat hits the truck, like, it enters a good horror balance, I think. And the CGI was extraordinary too.
Yeah.
Well, that's a thing too, isn't it? That the technology caught up with the kind of storytelling he wanted to do.
Yeah, and that's why it's such a landmark movie, is that it really is the turning point where we see films start to use a lot more. Like, CGI was around, but no one really knew how to use it. And Spielberg had the vision and was surrounded by so many visionary artists that found out how to make it work in a way that seemed realistic enough for people to really believe, or at least to suspend their disbelief, to just take it all in and believe that dinosaurs could walk the earth. I mean, I can't tell you any kid that's watched that movie that isn't like, you know what? I think this could happen.
Yeah.
We could do this. But it was, like I said, just seeing the faces of these kids, seeing the real thing for the first time was, it was a treat.
I love that. I was just telling this story last night that my friend Heather and her kids have never seen Star Wars. So that's the appropriate reaction. But so we tried watching it on her flat screen television in her living room to disastrous effect, because her son, who is Griffin's friend, that he was talking about, like, well, that would never happen, or that doesn't make any sense, or how does R2 even move in the sand? Wouldn't he just sink? So then they started, you know, getting into, like, well, why is the speeder just hovering? Wouldn't that be a waste of gas? And I'm like, I can't. So I just fell asleep.
Well, that's why we have Star Trek for the kids that don't want to do Star Wars, because it's a little bit too magical. That's why we have Star Trek, which is a lot more.
What kind of intelligent kids does your son hang out with? Like, I've never thought of R2 getting stuck in the sand, and I've seen that movie thousands of times.
And now,
never once.
It's going to bother you every single time you see it.
I let it go.
Well, and then they were talking about BB-8. Griffin was explaining how maybe that was why they came up with that solution and the way he moves. And
I like the way Griffin thinks.
My biggest problem was, like, lightsabers can go through skin, so isn't that scary? Like, that's what I was thinking about. Like, you're just waving that thing around.
Well, and then his friend thought, well, why are they bothering with lightsabers when they just shoot each other with those laser guns?
Because it's Jedi's. Jedi's don't use guns.
It's a more elegant fighting style.
Defense.
We are hanging out with Tom Hush talking about the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which was this week at the Music Box for its 6th year. So let's talk a little bit more about those movies and maybe some other movies that Tom wants to tell us about. More after this on 720. Oh, by the way, to Scott from the 224, thank you, from Lyle. Love you too. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Thank you so much for hanging out pretty late on the Patty V Show. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. Joining me is comedian Michael Palasak, who is performing at the Zanies on Wells. You can go to zanies.com for showtimes and ticket information, and also go to his website to catch some of his clips. Mm-hmm. And if you're not in Chicago, maybe you want to see what his schedule is coming up.
Mm-hmm. I have a short film on my webpage too.
You have a short
film?
That
I made.
Excellent.
It's on my website.
Excellent.
It was not in their festival, but it was
not. We'll have to find out how to submit that for next time.
It's called 7th grade. No, it's not. It's a prequel.
Well done. And you act all the parts.
Yeah, all the parts.
All the roles. Tom Hush joins us in studio. He was at the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which was at the Music Box for its sixth year. We've talked about the movies Fast Color and Jurassic Park and Eighth Grade. The other movies were Shotgun and Support the Girls. Those are the other two?
Yeah, those are the other two that I really enjoyed, that I put on my list of things that I want to see again in the future.
Nice.
Excellent. And what a great way to see some movies that you might not otherwise know about in case they don't get distribution.
Yeah, absolutely. Complete. I mean, and when it comes to this festival, this isn't going to set you back an exorbitant amount of money. I think a festival pass was like $150. Mm-hmm. And the way that they structure the festival is so that you can literally see, there's no scheduling conflicts. It's literally one after another.
Right.
You can see every single program that they have to play.
That's great.
That's lovely.
Yeah. When you say you'll see a movie again, because the one thing I get really nervous about when I sit down to watch a movie is like, this is the only time I'm ever going to see it.
Mm.
But you put yourself in a place where you might see it again if you really like it.
Yeah, I think for me personally, and I don't consider myself a critic, but mm-hmm. when I am evaluating how I feel about a movie, one of the things I really like to look at is replay value, is mm-hmm. would I watch this again? And it doesn't need to be 100 times, but and there are some really great movies. There's some really great movies that I will never watch again.
Yeah.
American History X.
No.
Unbelievable movie. Fantastic. We'll never watch it again.
I watched Django twice and I was like, I should not have done that. Yeah, I'm scared of everything now. Like, it's brutal. It's so brutal.
But yikes. Yeah, a lot of these movies, I was like, you know what? I enjoyed for many different reasons, and I hope to find some more, you know, things that I didn't notice the first time or mm-hmm. something like that. There's just some there with each of these movies, there was something in it that wants me, that I want to go back to mm-hmm. and maybe revisit in the future.
Yeah.
Now, working at a movie theater, I mean, how do you watch the movies? When you're done working, in between your shifts, do you
ever get it ruined because you saw like part of it and then you had to go to work?
Right. Yeah. Or do you not want to tell us because you don't want to get in trouble? Yeah. With your bosses?
I'll go a little inside baseball.
If you were somebody
here.
Else.
So yeah, I mean, working in a movie theater, the most ironic thing about it is that people will come up to me at the box office and they'll ask me, oh, have you seen this yet? And I'll say no. And they say, well, why not? You work in a movie theater. I was like, because I'm working.
Right.
I'm here all the time. But yeah, usually we'll put together like little family screenings or something like that. I think because we have to make sure all the movies work. So yeah. We do projectionist screenings, although it's not on film anymore. We need to make sure that the keys work to actually play the movie off the drive. So we'll all get together and usually watch something ahead of the premiere to make sure it's framed right. We don't have to change the masking, things like that.
Do you guys have because so many theaters now, the previews are about 20 minutes. Like, so people figure they don't have to get there at actually showtime, but some theaters are starting to change that where they're catching up pretty close to actual showtime, and it's messing with me.
Yeah, that's where we're at. And people, it's kind of a point of contention at times.
Yeah.
You don't have previews.
We do have previews, but it's only about 7 to 8 minutes.
It's not like 15 to 20.
No.
We show
maybe 3 to 4 trailers, and then boom, you're nice. In.
Yeah, so it's messing me up a little bit because we always feel like we have a time cushion.
Yeah, it's like you're going to miss the opener.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I feel we have a policy where, and I believe the Music Box also has the same policy, once a film is 20 minutes in, you cannot buy a ticket.
Yeah.
Because we want to maintain some of the pageantry, some of the illusion of watching the movie. And sometimes people are like, well, I mean, what's the big deal? People are leaving and going to the bathroom. It's like, yeah, but they were here on time.
Yeah. We're not going to be mad at someone for a bladder issue.
No, so, like, late seating. Look at that.
We try not to. We are more than happy to make accommodations, though, especially people if you have kids or if you are of the senior age.
No, those people with kids need to figure it out.
Get there on time.
You were talking about adjusting the size of the screen. I was at a movie theater one time, and they advertised this ultra screen or whatever. But mm-hmm. when I went there, I realized that they just kind of blew it up, and I missed out on part of the picture. Isn't there like some legal problems with that? Like, you can't like not show the whole...
That would be annoying.
Yeah, it was so annoying, and my brother makes fun of it because I was like, I'm not going to see that in that theater ever again.
No. Yeah, and it's interesting you should mention that because a lot of movies, especially nowadays, come with very specific instructions on how it needs to be played. For example, Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk was shot in a very specific way in a very specific aspect ratio. He's very well known for shooting in IMAX, so even if you're not an IMAX screen, it has to look a certain way. And I remember even looking at the instructions instructions and looking at the projector and being like, oh God, I hope we don't get a lawsuit.
Wow.
It has to be done a very specific way. And for the sake of the customer, we
had like $9.95 a month and I can see unlimited movies, but one a day and no like 3D movies.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And and do you guys accept that at your theater?
Yeah, because basically the way MoviePass works is they send you out what ostensibly a MasterCard and you check in on the app and they MoviePass, based on what theater you're at, will load the appropriate amount of money for one movie ticket on. You run it. We run it like a credit card. We get our movie ticket and then we're good. We're done.
Yeah.
Is that helping the theaters, do you think? Where are you guys on that? You don't have to answer for the theater if you don't feel comfortable.
I think in a general sense, it is a good theaters should accept it because it does. You still get your money.
Yeah.
It's not like it's taking away money from the theater. And in fact, your customers now have more money to spend on the snacks, which
I got fruit snacks and popcorn, which is rare.
Bingo.
Yeah.
And that's what actually makes,
I got all that.
That's what actually makes a movie theater money. Ticket prices are split with the distributor and the studios and everything like that because they need to get their money back. We're essentially just renting the movie to bring people in so they will buy snacks. Like, it's good for us. I like MoviePass. The only problem is that if people have an issue with it, we cannot help them. Like, I've had people, their MoviePass doesn't work, and they're like, well, can I just go in? I'm like, no.
Oh, that's
funny. You
can't
do that. You don't have a ticket. You didn't pay for anything.
I heard AMC didn't like it at first, or maybe they still don't, because they said it cheapened the value of a movie. They didn't want so many people to see so many movies that it could be, like, less than $1 for a movie, which I disagree with, because if you have a movie pass, you don't have a lot of money probably.
Yeah.
Like, if you have tons of money, there's no need for a movie pass.
And trust me, it's not the movie pass users that are cheapening the experience of seeing a movie. It's the, like, middle-aged dude that won't shut up during Avengers. That's what's really he's on his phone, he's tweeting the entire thing and filming the post-credits. That's what cheapens the experience, not people enjoying themselves.
And that's what drives some people out of the theater. I was at a theater and somebody answered their phone and started a full-on conversation in the theater.
It's so rude.
It's crazy. And how about kids when they're like 3 or 4 year olds who are crying in the theater, too young for a movie that's not appropriate for them?
It's, I mean, and I want to be as both as a human being and as a theater employee, I want to be as sympathetic as possible because people want to just go see a movie. For the love of God, they want to see a movie. But if you're trying to bring your 4-year-old, and this is something that did happen, to a nighttime showing of 50 Shades Freed, the answer is no. Like, I don't care that you're their legal guardian. I'm not going to let you bring your toddler in to go see softcore pornography.
Because you care about this country.
Yeah. I care about what happens to this poor child.
What is the rule as a person who goes to movies a lot? Like, what is rude or not rude when it comes to, like, my feet going on the seat in front of me? That's not allowed? Even if no one's there?
Preferably, no.
Okay.
If I see it and there's no one in front of you, I'm not going to stop you.
Yeah.
But, like, come on. You don't put your feet up on the good furniture.
Yeah.
People sit there. And plus, there's probably some gum or something.
Yeah.
You don't really want to get that stuff.
But the rail is okay. If you're in front of the rail,
I'll give it up for the rail.
Okay.
I'll say it was the rail.
Yeah, I think you're right on that one. I think the rail. I have to say, I was at a movie one time with my last producer, with Craig. We went to go. It was a packed theater. And people had left, like, seats in between them. Mm-hmm. Right, so there were no two seats left next to each other.
Man.
So there was one seat at the end of an aisle, and then one in the middle. And Craig was like, "That's all right, we can just, like, sit apart," which would have been fine too.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, you guys can all see that we're trying to find seats together. So I made I was like, "Excuse me, do you guys all mind moving over one?"
Yeah,
most people are chill with it.
Yeah.
They'll do it because it's kind of like, it's almost like men's urinal rules. Like, if you've ever gone into a men's bathroom, it's almost always,
give yourself some space.
Yeah, everybody likes to give each other space, which is cool. But if someone needs to go to the bathroom, they're going to use that middle urinal. And if someone wants to sit there with their friend or however many people, you can scoot down. It's not going to change the experience that much.
One thing I really don't like, which is probably not at your theater, I don't like the movie theaters that have gotten rid of normal seats and put in all lazy boys. Because, like,
ooh, not cool for
I want to sit and watch, and I'm almost falling asleep during Black Panther, which isn't a movie I want to fall asleep during.
There's a theater over at Block 37 where it reclines, and you have, like, a tray that slides over you, and there's seated service.
It's like Wall-E.
Yes, it is. I'm waiting for someone to come along and just shovel the food into my face, because you push a button and the server comes out And they're pretty, you know, they're pretty swift, and, yeah. and you know, they're not interrupting the movie, yeah. but at the same time, it's very strange.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the crises that theaters are having right now, and the movie industry is having, is how do we get more butts in seats? And instead of making better movies that have more diverse casts, which have been shown to do better in the box office, bring more people in, you know, they've decided that, oh, different accoutrements is what you really need. You need a recliner. You need popcorn to your seat. You know, all
full
these
service menu cocktails. Yeah.
There are theaters that have made a really good name for themselves doing this, such as the Alamo Drafthouse franchises.
If that's your thing.
If that's your thing. But really, I tried that when I was in Austin once. Was not for me.
What do you think about... so like, you talk about diversity in movies and things. Do you think it's better? I heard Judd Apatow say in an interview one time, like, he would prefer a movie that's an accurate representation of that culture rather than stuffing all these different ethnicities into it, and then have, but just a bunch of different representations. So you have a diverse, you can go see a bunch of different movies, but it's not like this movie has to have a black person, a Mexican, and an Asian person in it. It's just you get all those voices in different movies.
Right. Like, if I'm going to go see...
like, Superbad was mostly white because it was about a mostly white community.
Sure. And I think the... we can start tackling that issue when we start seeing more movies that are made that do that are just let's say all African American casts.
Yeah.
Something like Girls Trip.
Yeah.
Something like Black Panther. Those movies did so well. Black Panther partially because it was a Marvel movie, but Girls Trip.
Yeah.
Pretty simple romantic comedy, kind of just a fun comedy. Mm-hmm. And it did so well because for once in their lives, black folks got a chance to go see themselves on screen. Black women got to go see themselves represented on screen. They got to hear conversations. They're like, oh, man, me and my friends do this. And we love going on trips together. And it was just fun. It was just well made, and it spoke to a specific audience. So if we can see more of those, then we won't necessarily need to do the whole diversity check.
Yeah, yeah.
Or casting for the sake of casting, like, yeah, a terrorist, right. like you're saying. By the way, before we go to the break, we have from the 773, I saw Black Swan when it came out, and someone brought their 6 and 8-year-old children with them.
Oh my God, why?
That was such a good movie. It's okay.
they're better for it. Now they can watch the rest of Darren Aronofsky's filmography.
More after this on 720 WGN.